Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. The show is also sponsored by reclaimingtherepublic.org and also, as I said, MobiusStripPress.com. Both of these sites have a plethora of information and access to other sites. I even have my recommended reading list, which actually is out of date, so I need to update that because I've read quite a few books since then. I will repeat this because it is worth repeating. The three reasons why you want to download my podcast is, one, this is the only show that is solution-based. It actually has a solution, a constitutional solution, for all of the federal government overreach that we're dealing with. This is the solution. It's not chasing after your pet peeve or problem. As I always say, it's not about abortion, immigration. It's not about any of these types of things that everybody is getting all hyper about. It is about the Constitution and compliance to it. And if we get the government complying to it, then all these other problems go away. The content on this show will refer to content, and this is the second reason. The content on the show will refer to content in previous shows and upcoming shows. And so it is really important that you stay abreast with the content as well as past and future content so that you can understand, especially as we start getting legislators calling in this election year and start positioning ourselves over the next 2 years, of getting enough state legislators to push and initiate Republic Review. So you're going to want to keep downloading these podcasters. There is no other relevant content. I mean, the problems du jour, the shootings, whatever these tragedies are, they truly are tragedies. They're tragedies because we've allowed the moral fiber and the fabric of our society has decayed to a point where we're literally busting at the seams. And not just in obesity, but in all sorts of ways. So anyway, thirdly, bear in mind regarding the podcast, why you want to download them, bear in mind the content on the show is not ephemeral or temporary like I was just talking about. It is something that is relevant, which will stand the test of time. As a matter of fact, 100 years from now, individual liberty and individual sovereignty will be foremost and hopefully paramount to every citizen that is living within this republic if it still stands. And so this is the real reasons why you really want to download these podcasts. And don't forget, these podcasts are available at reclaimingtherepublic.org. I would tell you to feel free to call in, but to be honest, as I'm doing these interviews with these great men and women, it's really hard to be able to open up the phone lines because I only have these short little windows for you to call in. So that being said, and I've got a little dialogues I try to say, it's not that I don't want an interruption, but if I can, I'll take it. But if I can't, forgive me. And I'm going to try to have some free time on Friday after my last segment of Mr. Griffin. And so please feel free to hold your, write them down, write down all your thoughts and questions, and then give me a call on Friday. If you or your group would like that presentation, I've been saying this, it is on my reclaimingtherepublic.org take action page. If you go underneath the two presentation slides that I put up there for you in PDF format, by all means, you can just click on that link that says the video's here. Click on that and actually watch that presentation, at least the first 30 minutes, because if you do, it will broaden your paradigm regarding this republic and what we need to do to take it back. I don't have much more to add on the crowdfunding, but I just want you to know it is coming. We will be setting it up. I will say this, that today, I'm going to do three segments, and tomorrow I will do three more segments, and then Friday, one segment. So there will be time on Friday. But I hope you really enjoyed my conversation with Dr. Vile. I hope to probably in the next month or so actually get him back on and get him to talk a little bit more. I know he had a book that was talking about disaster relief and so forth. And so one of the things he mentioned is that the Constitution swings like a pendulum, or I should say the people in government swings like a pendulum. But I want to be clear, and I know I mentioned the reference of the pendulum regarding compromises, that it constantly swings towards secularism and those compromises, but it does not ever swing back. We never gain any ground back. It's kind of like a one-way ratcheting, almost like a perpetual winding watch, because it's perpetually taking away, taking away, taking away. The Constitution does not give allowance for swinging one way or the other. The Constitution only has allowance for change, for the government to be changing in any fashion, way, or form. It has to be done via the Article 5 process. And so with that, there is no allowance for popular consensus or anything else. If you want something to occur, it really has to require 38 states for an amendment to go through. And I want to be very clear that when the good doctor is talking about, well, we've been doing this, and he says this, he says this a few times, and he's not the only one. Well, we've been doing this for a couple hundred years now. Folks, show me in the Constitution where there's a statute of limitations that if we can fool you into allowing us to take your liberties and fool you into taking the state's roles, responsibilities, and powers that are were supposed to be left to them, well, then after so long, we get to keep these things and we automatically get to amend the Constitution. Well, that's not in the Constitution, friends. You won't find that anywhere. There is no such thing as precedence or case law in the Constitution either. There is only one way to change the Constitution. And I've been telling you this and telling you this, and it is a fundamental part of the Republic review process. Did the federal government follow the codified process? Codified meaning systematic. Did it follow the systematic process of getting two-thirds of the of both houses to pass an amendment that they agreed upon and then forward that to the states and get three-fourths of the states to agree upon it as well and pass it? It's got to be 38 states for 50. And so three-fourths or more. So just so you understand this, if that doesn't happen, if the Article 5 process has not been engaged, then everything that they have done has been for naught. It is unconstitutional, it's illegal, and it is what we call, and it is the primary definition of tyranny. Because tyranny is the arbitrary rules and laws being cast by government without following the supreme law of the land as it is. And the supreme law of the land as it is states that you must amend the Constitution for the federal government to take on any new role, responsibility, and power. And that was clearly stated in the selling of this during the ratification debates. And I make the academic point, and nobody can argue against this, that the ratification debates are physical and legal binding appendages to the Constitution, because they were used in basically convincing the states, this is what this means, this is how this is going to happen. And so as they described and delineated and defined the Constitution further in these ratification debates, this is where the states agreed upon it based on those definitions. And so that's why they're legally binding. So let me move forward. We're going to come back with Mr. Griffin on the line. And I hope you enjoy this. He's definitely a big part of our history. So thank you very much. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back after word from our sponsors. Rippey Homes is a family-owned business that has been building homes in the Spokane area for over a decade. For years, they've offered their customers an array of construction projects and services. But due to market demands, they now exclusively focus building high-efficiency homes and business offices, offering custom turnkey solutions for customers seeking to save money on operational costs while enjoying the latest innovations and construction technology. They understand many of these features can be expensive, but this is why they work closely with a team of leading designers to integrate the details and options that suit your needs. When it comes to translating designs into reality, the artisans they employ make this happen. If you're interested in building a cutting-edge dream home or office, then contact Cameron Rippey at cgrippy.com. That's Cameron Rippey at cgrippy.com. This is G.R. Mobley. The reason the progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost all billionaires in the world are funding a vast array of different groups, and their efforts are to undermine our Republican Constitution. If you don't believe me, Google the donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, and many other state rights, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved and supporting programs based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty. Thank you. Hey, folks, it's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I have learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Vaughn Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money on just any good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist like Dr. Vaughn Tracy. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Vaughn Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I ask you to give Dr. Vaughn Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 466-6614. Again, sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. Thank you. Hi, this is G.R. Mobley. If you've listened to my weekly show, Reclaiming the Republic, right here on Red State Talk Radio, every weekday evening from 6 to 7 Eastern and 3 to 4 Pacific, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. It is a hard, fast contract. In accordance to Article 7, the states are the only stakeholders in this contract, and inherent in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight over the contract. This means they can audit the contract against the general government and the unconstitutional powers they are exercising. Any single state can perform this audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what I refer to as Republic Review. Please read my executive summary on reclaimingtherepublic.org to learn the details about Republic Review. Thank you. Okay, so we're back, and on the line I actually have Mr. Griffin, or G. Edward Griffin, the author of Jekyll Island, or The Creatures of Jekyll Island, and several other books, and actually documentaries and so forth. And so I want to jump straight into the why did you get involved in this, Mr. Griffin? What was the driver that caused you to write your first book in 1964?
And that's a good question. It's hard to say because, you know, like so many things in life, you don't approach your goal directly. You sort of wander around like a steel pinball going ding, ding, bouncing off of things. And that's kind of what I did. I started off in school thinking that I wanted to go into speech and drama and communications, which eventually I did, of course, but I thought I would wind up doing more Hollywoodish things. You know how kids are. They're always attracted. They want to be on stage, and if they have any skills at all, everyone encourages them, and then the first thing you know, that's their career. I was sort of on that path when I was a young kid. I I won't go into all the details, but I wound up being a child actor in radio in Detroit. This was way, way back in the day. And when we were producing out of Detroit, several good programs came, like The Lone Ranger and The Hermit's Cave and things like that, and the Ford Theater and things like that. So I became part of a kind of a small little group of kids that whenever they needed child actors, they came to this little group. And so I was doing a lot of radio acting. And if you ever hear any of these old Lone Ranger programs, if you ever hear a kid say, "Gee, Dad, here come the Indians," or something like that, it might have been me. So when I went through school, I thought, well, this is what I'm going to do. And well, it didn't turn out that way, because eventually when I got through the military and came out to Hollywood, first of all, I had done a little stint of I was at television in Detroit. Detroit had one of the finest and earliest large television stations in the U.S. It was WWJ TV. So I got a job there as an assistant a director. It was a sort of a glorified name for a floor manager. I pulled cables and threw cues and did all the grunt work on the floor of the studio. Anyway, so I came out of that and I went into the military, and then I came out to Hollywood. All right, this is where I'm going to go to Hollywood. Really, really get into it seriously here. Well, you know, when I got there, I found out that there was a lot better talent than mine, waiting tables and washing cars and so forth. And it just didn't make sense. By this time, I was married. I had a child, and I was going through my savings like crazy. And I thought, boy, I got to get a real job. So I did. I went in the corporate world. Dangerous thing. I didn't know it at the time, but I became a corporate guy. And I went to work for a large insurance company, doing a sort of a combination of sales development and underwriting and that kind of thing, working in group insurance installations for large corporations. Well, I'm going into too much detail perhaps, but then while I was in that mode, I had a client in Los Angeles, the California Cotton Oil Company. And I remember the name and everything because the president was Leonard Reed Jr. And I had an appointment with Leonard Reed Jr. And while I was there, I was early, I was sitting in the waiting room, and they had a big stack of little magazines about Reader's Digest size, not quite that thick, but that size. It was called The Free Man. So I didn't see anything else around there except the stack of The Free Man. So I picked it up and started to read it. And lo and behold, it was amazing, because for the first time in my life, I wasn't really old by that time, but I was married and had a little budding family. But first time in my life, I read something which we might call today free enterprise economics. I mean, I went through school, and I went to the University of Michigan, and I only got Keynesian economics there, what little bit I did get. And, I came out pretty much what we would today, many people today call a liberal. I believed in collectivism and a very aspect of it. And so when I read this little silly story, it so impressed me because it was so clear and so logical. And I thought, wow, I never thought about it that way before. And so that was the beginning of all of this. I subscribed to that little magazine. It was published by the Foundation for Economic Education. And lo and behold, the president of that organization was Leonard Reed Sr. So that's why that was the connection. So I collected everything that the Foundation for Economic Education put out. I still have the library, all leather-bound books, or cloth-bound books, I should say. And it was the beginning of a whole new education for me. This time, it wasn't at the university. I was getting it in my own living room. I was just reading books and things.
So if I can interject, your first book, A Fearful Master, was a challenging look at the UN. And so that, to me, was a political position book. And I'm thinking that you're in your early 30s at this point in time. And looking at the macro, because I'm kind of a macro historian, I know that prior to that, W. Cleon Skousen wrote a book called The Naked Communist. And then shortly after that, either at the end of that year or early the next year, a group called the John Birch Society formed with Jack Welch, which you happen to have written some books about. And so I was just trying to figure out at what point, and so what age were you when you were looking at these freedom economics to kind of gear you towards this political position and then bring your association to Jack and the John Birch Society?
Well, yeah, exactly. You nailed it. That I remember the year, at least. I don't remember the month, but I came across the Freeman. I think it was in December of 1959. Okay. And so there you have it. And then by 1960, I was in full gallop. And but I was still not anywhere near to being aware. You know, the Freeman and the foundation was very sort of ivory tower-ish. It was all about theories and ideas, and of course, this is excellent. You have to start with those. If you don't get your ideology straight, if you don't get your logic straight, then anything you might do in the form of activism further along is going to be wrong, and you're probably going to wind up doing exactly the opposite of what you had intended. But in that early stage, I was very much steeped in ideas and ideology and theory, and all of that sort of thing. And it wasn't until later that I came across some works by Robert Welch. And, of course, he was more on this, I guess, if the idea is that he was a street fighter in the sense that his was the real world. And, you know, that kind of the theories are good. We got to get those theories. But now look around you. This is what's really happening. And you're not going to defeat these people by debating with them. You have to defeat them in the marketplace of politics and economics and social dominance and that kind of thing. So that was a new element. It wasn't long after that that I quit my job in the corporate world and went out there and I went to work for the Birch Society, exactly as you said. Right. That's the only reason I got to meet Robert Welch, who was the founder. And I know most people think of Robert Welch as some kind of a wacko. Actually, he was a brilliant theoretician, a great historian,
right?
A very heavy scholar. Not too hot on public relations. He would often do things that made him look bad. He had a short temper, short fuse, and when the cameras are going, the press loved to egg him on and prod him and to get him to do things that, you know, he might regret later on, to say things and blurt them out. And we spent more time trying to do repair on those things than getting to the real issues. But anyway, yeah, that's all part of it. And it was by 1961, 1962, I was in really steeply involved in all of this. Yes, I had started giving speeches on the United Nations, and I don't know why I'm going into so much detail, but if I could the mistake of asking me.
Yeah, that's okay. And if I can interrupt, we're actually coming up on a hard break. And so what I wanted to do was, when we get back from the break, I wanted to ask you about the publishing. And was the John Birch Society publishing that book for you as an employee or what? So as soon as we get back from the break, we can start delving into that. So please stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back. My show, Reclaiming the Republic, is more than an educational show. My intent is also to work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is result-oriented and is live across the Republic. Download and share our podcast. Like, follow, and share our page, Mobius Strip Press, and the articles and content posted on our Facebook page. Get informed about groups in the local area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. I'm amazed at just how much Rippey Homes takes pride in their partnerships. From the designers they work with, the artisans they employ, and you, the homeowner, they relish in getting it right the first time. to do this, they place their focus up front on what you want and what you need and begin forming a plan like a sculptor, taking care of the intricate details to ensure it meets your expectations. Whether you need innovation in a custom home to harmonize with the environment while offering the latest in building materials and technology, Rippey Homes takes a bottom-up approach that centers around you, the customer. They know that you are the integral component in the American dream, which is how they help you build your dream. To make your dreams become reality, contact Cameron Rippey at cgrippey.com. That's Cameron Rippey at cgrippey.com. This is G.R. Mobley. I'm working with Trevor Lawton, Douglas V. Gibbs, Tom DeWeese, John Hancock, and many other good patriots in setting up rodeos for Republic Review this summer. We're doing this in Wyoming, Utah, South Dakota, Idaho, Kansas, and North Dakota for this election cycle. If you are beginning to understand the power of Republic Review, then we need your help one way or another. More importantly, if you live in these states or know any patriotic leadership, whether that's an elected official, grassroots leader, or political leader, please reach out to me on Facebook or email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know who we can work with in organizing these events. It is our intent to get one and hopefully all of these states to call for Republic Review. If we can get this started, I promise you we will make America great once and for all. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are supporting to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on Red State Talk Radio. Thank you. Okay, so folks, we're back with Mr. Griffin. And Mr. Griffin, right before the break, you were talking about publishing your first book and working with the John Birch Society. And so my question regarding the John Birch Society, did they publish your first book or did you actually have to go and find a publisher and just move forward on your own in getting that book out there?
No, the Birch Society actually published my first book. It was called The Fearful Master,
okay.
A Second Look at the United Nations.
Right.
And I wrote that on contract. By that time, I wasn't, you know, on the staff or anything. I was just independent. Actually, I was quite ill, and I had to retire from active work. And so in an act of kindness, I think Robert Welch said to me that, well, look, you have all this information about the United Nations, and you give one heck of a speech on it, and while you're recovering and can't get out in the world, would you like to try writing a book? And my inclination was to say, oh, I don't know how to write, but I found myself instead of saying, oh, sure, no problem, because I needed the money.
Okay.
And so it was one of those things in life where a terrible tragedy turns out to be a great opportunity.
And so
I discovered that I could write. In fact, I enjoyed it. But I would never have done that had I not been forced into that mode. So that's how it started. And yet that was the first book, and it was published by the Society. And from that time forward, it wasn't long afterwards, I struck out completely on my own, formed my own company, American Media, Inc. It's not the one in Florida that publishes The Inquirer.
Okay.
It's by the same name. But you know, shortly after that, I was totally on my own in my own business. And all my books since then were self-published by me and American Media.
Right. So in the first book, Did you get into the details of the supposed treaties that we had, or the limitations within the treaty that we made in joining the UN, and the lack of, I'll call it additional treaties and or subjugations, because I find ourselves, as our relationship in the UN, we have drifted well outside the scope of the treaty that we kind of went into an accord with the rest of the nations in the UN. And so was that a key part of that in looking at the UN, or?
Well, I wouldn't call it a key part, but it was certainly in the book.
Okay.
You're referring to the supremacy of treaty law
Correct.
over the Constitution,
Correct.
and it's certainly an important issue. And most people, even today, don't realize that if we sign a treaty, because of Supreme Court decisions dating way, way back, it is assumed in courts of American law, it is assumed that the treaty overrides the Constitution, even.
Right.
So,
In very specific terms, the treaty overrides the Constitution in the terms of the treaty itself. So, in other words, if the treaty is basically very ambiguous and says the United States will be a subject to the United Nations in all things, then we're kind of, excuse the French, kind of screwed. But if it's not, and that treaty was not that ambiguous, it just meant that we were becoming a partner and a member of the United Nations, if I remember correctly.
Yes, that was the phrasing of it. But of course, we know because we know who drafted that treaty
Sure.
and who supported it and promoted it, that it was the intent of those people that it eventually would become the trap that would ensnare American sovereignty and merge the United States
Right.
into a sub-political position in what we now call, or what they now call, the New World Order.
Right.
But at that time, it was just in its early stages and not too easy to see as it is today.
Right. But let me inject this too, because it's the same thing as the Constitution. The Constitution went out and it was sold by the Federalist, or I should say the delegates that were part of the Constitutional Convention in all the ratification debates, clearly defined and limited the federal government to the enumerated powers and so forth and so on. And so when they moved forward, they were constrained literally by the agreements in those ratifications and the Constitution. And it took a little while for Alexander Hamilton and then John Marshall to start throwing out implications and then started twisting the interpretations. And I find that's the exact same thing that's happened with our UN treaty, because there's been a lot of interpretation that are, very misleading, and actually some outright lies as far as what our role and involvement based on that treaty is with the United Nations. And so,
Absolutely.
okay.
Certainly.
Okay, so.
That was certainly in my book in those days, but it was sort of like a paragraph or maybe two paragraphs in chapter 14.
Right.
There were a lot of other more interesting things and more immediate things going on
Sure,
in those
sure.
days.
Right. But to me, at this point, we need to understand what it takes to get back to, what we agreed to do. And if we find that it no longer serves our purpose, then because our joining, the interesting thing about joining the UN, it's not that we were compelled to maintain membership. We could withdraw at any point, as nations have. And this is a part of the grand solution, because the UN is the secular progressive solution for what I will say is the United States Constitution. And I'm going into a theory here, and I just want to share it with you, that the Constitution was designed to allow any state to be able to apply to become a member of the Republic. And we, as we drifted away from the original intent and became nationalists and allowed these nations and sovereignties to kind of bubble up more and more as the world became more or smaller and smaller from conquest and so forth, that Wilson's first attempt was to try to subjugate the United States in the League of Nations, and then FDR's attempt in the United Nations. But my point is that there's no reason why Estonia or any other nation actually could come to the United States and say, we want to become a part of the United States. And I believe that was the framers' intent in that. It was a little grander than that because they were just looking at the expanse of the United Nations or the United States physically. But the language doesn't limit it to any type of state. And maybe I'm going into a bit more heady approach, but I apologize for digressing. I just wanted to share that
with
you.
Well, I appreciate that because that I think that's an excellent digression, if it is that at all. I'm not sure that – I think that's too extreme a word. I know that that idea must have crossed the minds of the framers of the Constitution. In all of my years, I've only come across one reference to that idea from those old documents, and it wasn't direct. It was sort of oblique, and but I know they must have discussed it. Certainly, it's an obvious thought.
Right.
Who else could? And I find it extremely interesting because I'm working on something now, which Lord, I hope I live long enough to finish it. But that would be my last chapter in the book, and that chapter would be a proposed constitution for any political body, including an international political body. And it could, the concepts are the important things, not the actual wording of it, but the concepts. And it would apply equally, with equal force, to a village, a little township, a county, a state, a nation, or if people wanted to apply it to the world, it would apply to that too. But now that scares a lot of our friends because they think they equate world government. Well, of course, there's the word government. That's the wrong word. I don't want to digress on that, but I will say I don't use the word government in these discussions because it's it predefines the debate. You have no choice to where you go once you use that word because the purpose of a government is to govern.
Right.
And okay, that's not what I have in mind.
Correct.
So I like to use the word state. It's a more neutral word. And then we can decide what kind of a state do we want. Do we want a government which governs, or do we want a state that's called a protectorate that protects? And therein lies the essence of all of these issues. And if
right.
we had an international state, and it was truly a protectorate, and its powers were limited to the protection of life, liberty, and property, and nothing more.
Right.
Then I think it would be a pretty good thing.
Yes, Mr.
So when we talk about world states and world regulatory systems, we have to go deeper and not just say, "Oh, it's world, therefore it can't be good." We have to say, "What kind?"
So, Mr. Griffin, we're up at a hard break right now, so we will be right back after a word from our sponsor. So please stay tuned, folks. Thank you so much. This is G.R. Mobley. Most of you understand the importance of having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategic goal for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy, you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain or restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Tracy at VonTracyDDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. Thousands of people each month are moving to what is referred to as the Redoubt area. That's R-E-D-O-U-B-T. If you're tired of insane liberal policies and you have a growing concern in the ideological makeup of your community, you should do what many others are doing and look into joining us here in the Redoubt area. If you settle on moving to the Spokane area, you need to contact Rippey Homes to help you develop the ideal solution that can help you reduce your operational costs and reduce your dependence on the nation's aging infrastructure. Rippey Homes offers a full package service, including real estate, Passive House designers with an array of options to help you blend in with your surroundings. Why risk what is important, your family and your home? So check out Cameron Rippey at CGRIPPY.com. That's Cameron Rippey at CGRIPPY.com in the heart of the Redoubt country. This is G.R. Mobley. I've been on the radio for over a year, and for over a decade, I've been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we are going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument, and most do not like it for money reasons. If you have not read my executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can pick up my executive summaries, books, and content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you'll know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content. Most of it's free at reclaimingtherepublic.org and mobistrippress.com as well. This way, you can become a part of the solution and not a part of the problem. Hi, this is G.R. Mobley. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states in accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution. These conventions require states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. These conventions are unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to get my executive summary on Republic Review and listen to Reclaiming the Republic right here on Red State Talk Radio every weekday evening from 6 to 5 Eastern and 3 to 4 Pacific. Thank you. Okay, so we're back, and we were just talking about your paradigm in, and we're still with Mr. Griffin, and you were talking about your paradigm in using political bodies and states, vice governments, and governing. And so I just wanted to, and the whole impetus behind this was, as I've always asserted, every single framer in the process of the building of the Republic and Congress and the United States government, they all attested to the fact that they were inspired by the divine hand of providence. And as a matter of fact, they were so unified in such a way that they actually called for a unanimous call to President Washington, the first session of Congress, to acknowledge and recognize the divine hand of providence in establishing this republic. And so if anybody reads that proclamation for Thanksgiving, it has nothing to do with feasting. It has nothing to do with turkey. That first proclamation was recognizing the divine hand of providence and establishing this country, giving us peace and tranquility and giving us our Constitution. And they credit that. And the whole point of this proclamation was that people set aside that day in serving him, the divine hand, the Lord, the Creator, for giving us what we had. And so with that right there, I believe that some of these things were inserted beyond the mind or the capacity of thought that the framers really understood. That's why the admission of other states was included, because they, one, understood the growth, and they left it to a point to where any state, because they actually went after, I should say went after, but they actually proposed to Mexico, Canada, and some other nations opportunities to join the Republic, and very few people know that. But anyway, I was just trying to kind of clear up the proposal or my paradigm in what I was presenting. But the interesting thing about there's so many interesting things about you, Mr. Griffin, that I want to go into. But you presented your first concept on the UN, and then you have this new career that launches, I believe it was 68 or sometime like that, in the documentary film industry and creating documentary films. And so was that just a natural step in logic for you to go into presenting things into that medium?
Well, it was a sort of a logical step and sort of a step of despair. I'll come back to that in a second because I can't let go in my mind this issue about the Confederation. And I just have one more thing I want to throw on that
Okay,
is
absolutely
this
sure.
confederation of states or nations, political bodies. That certainly is true. Everything we've said so far is true, but sometimes the implications are missed, and that is that if you have the authority to join into a federation, it is assumed and should be stated, often not stated, that you also have the right to leave it at any time you wish, because you are above the unit that you have created. You've created a sort of a psychological, you've created this thing called group, a federation, or whatever you want to call it, nation. State. It's a fictitious thing. It's only in the mind. It's a mathematical concept. You can't touch a group. You can touch individuals. You can't see a group. You can see a bunch of individuals, kind of like the word forest. You know, there's no such thing as a forest, only trees. So when we create this federation or nation or whatever we want to call it, it's a fiction in our minds. It's an abstraction.
Right.
And the only thing that's real in this equation are the people, individuals, human beings. And so it must be understood either by declaration or at least a verbal understanding or something that only the individuals have the authority to do anything. That this thing called group does not and must never be assumed to become superior to the individuals that created it. And because if it does, then you're on a slippery slope right into tyranny, and everybody can see that today. So where I'm going with all that is that when you create something like that, like the Federation of the States in North America, you also have the right to leave it. And that was understood in the early days. And of course, by the time the Civil War came along, that assumption was tested on the battlefield, and it was defeated on the battlefield in the name of opposing slavery. I think most historians are willing to admit, they have to admit, that the slavery issue was added to this period of conflict late in the game in order to sort of as a propaganda lever to gain acceptance and support for the North. Up until the point where the North was losing, or not losing, but not gaining in this battle, up until that time, there were a lot of people in the North who were said, "Look, we don't want to participate in this war. It has nothing to do with us." So the issue of slavery was added pretty much at a late hour to gain the high road, the moral ground, and that was the sort of the turning point internationally with support for the North in the Civil War,
Correct. And
and
I completely agree with you on that.
yeah, it was a matter of history, and
It is.
it's not to say that the slavery issue is not important. Of course it was, and it probably, that's a whole other issue. But the point I'm trying to make is that with the advent of the Civil War in America, then the concept of federation was lost, and the words that were spoken by Abraham Lincoln became the only thing that was remembered. Remembered part was, we must have unity. We must save the Union. The Union, the Union, and that the Union became the drumbeat of the subconscious mind of all the states. So at that point now, anybody that would suggest that a member state had the right to leave, pick up its marbles and leave, well, that's an outrageous thought, you see. And
But that.
I just mentioned it because to me, I find it interesting how, with the passage of generations, and the old folks die off and the new ones come up, and the new ones don't know about the debates and the challenges
Right.
and the issues of the previous generation, things just drift and change, and you wind up 4 or 5 generations later, and you don't recognize the system under which you live. It's completely different from what it was intended to be.
Correct. And actually, Madison kind of clarified that in Federalist Paper number 46. Actually, it was Federalist Paper number 43, where he talked about if any part of this contract is violated, then it is a breach of the entire contract, and that all parties are basically free to go any way they want. Now, to add to that, I know that Madison clearly also asserted that there is this affinity and this need to at least try to resolve issues and differences amongst the Republic to try to work out these details. So we got about a minute left, and so I wanted you to go ahead and finish your thought that in your Confederacy plan, you're trying to create a constitution that can be adopted by all states?
Well, of course, yeah, if they want to. You create a contract that is so attractive. It's so many benefits. And one of the benefits is that if any time you don't like it, you can leave. I mean, that is a powerful benefit. How many people would sign a contract today for anything? If there was a clause in that contract that says, okay, once you sign on this, you're stuck in this. That doesn't make any difference whether we violate the terms of the contract. It doesn't make any difference if you change your mind. It doesn't make any difference if we turn out to be thieves. It makes no difference. Once you sign, you're in it forever. Do you agree to that? And nobody would sign that. But yet that's what we evolve into.
Right, right. And so if you actually have a draft, I'd love to view it and take a kind of a look at it. We have 30 seconds before we go into break. So let me kind of shift gears. And I know you've kind of already talked about Jack Welch and the John Birch Society, but I wanted to get into some other, and I've mentioned Cleon Skousen. So I was hoping to try to get into how long you were involved. I think you're still kind of involved, but we'll pick this stuff up after the break. So we're going to be going into a break in just a couple seconds. And also, if you'd ever had a chance to meet Mr. Skousen and work with him as well. There's the break right now. So please stay tuned, and folks, we'll be right back. And Mr. Griffin, I'll be right back with you as soon as we have a word from our sponsors. And so, if you've noticed, Mr. Griffin was being very kind to me because I was referring to a Jack Welch when, in all honesty, it was Robert Welch, who was the founder and the driver behind the John Birch Society. So with that, he actually does end up correcting me, and you'll hear that. But I wanted, before I start getting into some of the analysis with where Mr. Griffin and I are talking, I wanted to get back because I don't have much time. I've got basically a little over a minute here. And I wanted to put things to bed with my previous interview with Dr. Vile. And so if you remember the very end, I said, what is it going to take for us to get there? What do we really need to do? And he talked about education, the status quo. And I'm telling you, folks, with the way the national secular grip is with the education system, that is no way to do that. It takes people to educate themselves in reading the source documents, as I have done and many others have done. But what it really takes, and this is what I injected at the very end, is it needs leadership above all to save this republic. In other words, we have to have people actually to champion, once again, individual liberty and individual sovereignty, because that's what leaders do. They champion for the common good of all people and get all people to rally on those principles. Many of the things the professor speaks of are not within the Constitution. At one point, he mentioned that the court system would not recognize the Republic Review or the audit. But again, the court does not recognize anything that is being done to the contract until the states have had their final say on the said contract. Keep in mind, they have no jurisdiction over this contract other than the few things that are within it. All these things that are well outside of it are left to the states to fix. And that is one of the reasons why The Kentucky and Virginia resolutions were forged for us to know what to do when it got so bad. And the question is it so bad today that we need to move forward with a with secession or what? And I believe the answer is no. What we have to do for the union's sake is get the federal government back into compliance. That's what we need, and I believe that's what we all want, because if we allow the federal government, our child government, to get away with all the things that it's doing, then what will end up happening is it will drive us into ruin, and it'll force us to capitulate. And that's no way to finish the greatest republic that has ever been created. So with you, I need your help in doing this. I am G.R. Mobley. We'll be back tomorrow with more of Mr. Griffin's interview. And together, we will be reclaiming the republic. Thank you so much.